from Wall Street to the White House. This is the Larry Kudlow Show.
Welcome back, folks. I'm Larry Kudlow. Great to be with you. I want to continue this discussion of Joe Biden lying to the American people about inflation and many other things. And like I said before, I don't like to use the word lie, but there's only so far cognitive dissonance is going to take you. Anyway, we're going to bring in my great friend Kevin Hassett, former chairman of the Council of Economic Advisors during the Trump administration. Kevin is now a distinguished visiting fellow at the Hoover Institution in Stanford in California. And he has a very important book. It's called The Drift, Stopping America's Slide to Socialism. And Kevin, you're going to be a star. We're doing this Fox Nation special on the drift to socialism. In fact, I think I've got you on three panels in 90 minutes. How's that?
Well, that's just awesome. Thank you. I'm going to keep you busy.
Well, it's a very important book. And by the way, this weekend I'm plowing through the CEA report on socialism. I reread your book. So, folks, buy the book, The Drift, Stopping America's Slide to Socialism. Now, Kevin, no matter how many James Taylor songs we can hear on the White House lawn, there is still quite a bit of inflation left. I talked about it in the opening. And it's galling to me to see the president deny it. It doesn't exist. Just deny, deny, deny. And I'm saying that Americans are a lot smarter than he thinks, and they see right through it. What do you think?
Yeah, I actually think that you could make the case that Bill Clinton was more forthcoming about Monica Lewinsky than Joe Biden has been about the economy. Right?
I mean,
especially the fullest of time, but think about it. So we've got the inflation thing that you're talking about, and of course they're in complete denial about inflation. And also, we've had two negative quarters of GDP growth. As you know, I've been saying since January that we're in recession. Two negative quarters, 10 out of 11 times since World War II has meant recession. And now GDP now is close to zero. So third quarter GDP, I think, could be negative, but we're going to talk about this. And he's out there bragging about the strong, vibrant economy. And if you look at the numbers that he's using, what he does is he compares things right now to like the peak of COVID when the economy was shut down. Hmm. And then he's like, I've got like the best economy ever of any president. He says stuff like that. You've heard it. And then he'll talk about like job creation since like the peak of the shutdown. He's really, really separated from reality, telling the American people lies, not being questioned by the media. It's a very scary time, that at some point, as you and I have talked about this before on your show, that we would never, if we had said something that was like close to false, then we would have just the crap beat out of us by the media. But these guys are lying about everything and getting away with it. And that's I think it's a threat to democracy. And that's the kind of thing, as you know, I write about in the book, The Drift, that the left controls the media. They control, respectability, if you like, because they control Harvard, and they're using that to shut up the defenders of capitalism and shut up the defenders of, free markets. And it's apparently working. Biden's getting away with this. His numbers are going up.
I inherited a crisis and I turned it into a resurgence. I would say he inherited a resurgence and turned it into a crisis. And I think
that's exactly right. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, really, the guy had a low inflation boom in early 2021, and here we are in the autumn of 2022 with all this embedded inflation and, as you say, recession. And you're right about the GDP tracker. That thing was knocked down from 2.5% to 0.5%. So the third quarter could conceivably be negative or flat, but that won't help. But, I mean, it's just a blatant lie. Now, one point here, I want to talk about the inflation and productivity and hoarding workers, but I think politically and really morally, Americans see through that. I mean, Americans look at what their own life is. Weekly wages are down almost 3.5% in the past year. and all the rising prices for food and groceries and energy and electricity and so forth and so on. Even gasoline's come down, but still way up from a year ago. I mean, they know better. And so I also think they want America to be, you know, a strong economy, make America great again. They know better, and I think they're going to revolt. I mean, I think this is a big election year issue, and I don't care what other people say. This is an inflation election, a recession election. It's an economic election, Kevin Hassett.
Yeah, you know, and the number that really jumped out at me when we were looking at the CPI report and thinking about what it meant for the economy this week is that is actually Mark Zandi's team did an estimate that, and I'll say the number correctly, Larry, in case you want to quote it in the future, that if you look at inflation over the last 12 months, then the average American family has to spend $460 a month more to get the same consumption that they got a year ago. And so, you know, if your salary has gone up, you know, by, you know, more than $5,000 a year this year, you know, raise your hand and congratulations. But almost no Americans have had a raise that's been able to keep up with inflation. And the average American has to spend $460 more a month to tread water, to just get the same exact bundle of stuff they got the year before. And since they don't have the income to do that, then they have to cut consumption. And that's why GDP is going down. And so the idea that we've got a strong economy or that we had like a couple negative quarters that it's just a blip is fundamentally flawed, because in the end, if people have a lower real income, then there's going to be lower real GDP, and their real incomes are not increasing because prices are going up faster than wages. And that's still true. And it's going to continue to be true, sadly, for the rest of the year. And so the denial, and I wrote a piece about this at National Review, I forget whether I sent it to you, Larry, but the denial is a serious threat, because the Fed can't really do this alone. Ronald Reagan helped Paul Volcker whip inflation by cutting government spending, you know, so they stopped helicopter dropping cash on people, and by having supply side tax cuts. And if you did that right now, then you could potentially have a soft landing. But if you're in denial and spending more money, as he did with the student loan forgiveness, then you're basically, you know, sending the airplane into the hurricane, and it's going to get really ugly.
What is that, Kevin? $460 a month, that's about $5,000 a year, something like that?
Yeah, multiply by 12.
That's a big tax. That's a big tax coming right out of your wages, coming right out of your buying power.
Yeah, for sure. And that's why, you know, as you said, that if you look at the economic surveys, everybody says inflation's the number one problem. And it's because if you go to the store, you know, it's something different about me, you, Larry, is that I don't think you do what Christy and I have me do, which is I'm the one who does the grocery shopping. But I like it. I like to go and just see what the prices are of everything and wander around. But if you go to the grocery store, you'll be astonished at some of the things that have happened. You know, like again, he cut up watermelon. I talked to you about how I spent $20 on a little plastic tub of cut up watermelon because I didn't look at the price. But everything that you put in the cart is higher, and some things that you've been putting in the cart for a long time, you have to stop buying. Here's an example. One of the things I like to do is sprinkle chia seeds. I like them. They give you protein and omega-3s on my cereal in the morning. A little tiny bag of chia seeds has gone from about $3 a bag to about $11 a bag. And so I have to give up my addiction to chia seeds just because I spent $11 for a little bag. But yeah, the American people see this and their life is worth.
Grocery prices up 13% year on year. Food prices alone up 11% year on year. And Biden sending out James Taylor to sing ballads. By the way, they were very pessimistic ballads. I don't know if there's meaning in that.
The thing that bugs me the most, though, about this is, and this gets into the cancel culture of the left, is that don't you remember there was like some child star that sang for Trump at the inauguration or something? And then like the entire like Hollywood enterprise blackballed her.
Vaguely. Right.
And so the whole time we were in the White House, there was never like any, no, you know, no pop star ever came and sang in the Rose Garden while we were there because they were terrified that they'd be black. Anyway, this I go into in the book, The Drift, as well, Larry, that socialists are inevitably totalitarians. The fact that it really it's weird, but James Taylor being at the White House is actually a symbol of the totalitarianism of these guys, too, because
You know, that's a key point. That's a really big point, right? Because in these socialist worlds, the totalitarian or authoritarian, they will lie. I mean, the big lie. Remember, we used to talk about the big lie during the Soviet communism era. You know, black is white and white is black. But Biden is employing similar tactics. I mean, we're going to take a break in a minute or two, and I want to talk about socialism and the drift of socialism. But Kevin, walk me through again. You said this: companies are hoarding labor because real wages are cheap. But then again, the productivity is collapsing and we're not getting any output. Because I think that's a sort of very hidden but important analysis in this inflation problem.
Oh, sure, yeah. And it's something that somehow, you know, keeps surprising the left-wing media. But what happens is that if you're a business and the price of the stuff you're selling is going up fast and you're not increasing the wages of your workers, then you don't have to let your workers off because, in fact, you know, prices are going up faster than wages. If there's no inflation and all of a sudden your sales are down, then you've got to lay off workers to reduce your costs. Otherwise, you're going to go out of business. But when there's inflation, you don't lay off the workers. Because, you know, say the price of apples goes from $1 an apple to $10 an apple, and then people spend $10, and instead of getting 10 apples, they get one apple. And so your workers are still getting $10 in sales, but there are fewer apples. That's why the GDP is down, and so that way it means productivity is low too. And so we just had the biggest decline in productivity since 1947, right? Since 1947. So this Biden economy is a train wreck already, but it's like a kind of a train wreck headed for Chernobyl. They really, really are messing things up, and they're in denial. And you know, the one thing I said I would come back to it is that your old friend Joe Sullivan, who worked with us in the White House, and I went back and looked, and there's this clear partisanship in the Bureau of Economic Analysis. And what happens is that in an election year where there's a Democrat in the White House, then the BEA data, like the gross domestic product numbers, always come out really rosy right before the election. And so we're going to get third quarter GDP the week before the election and then get revised down. Because in the end, they have to make the data look like what their data are. Huh. And so you watch. What's going to happen is we're going to have this window in October where everybody's like feeling better because the economic data have looked so good. And then right after the election, it's all going to get revised away. You watch.
Wow. You know, that's right. We talked about this several years ago when we were in there. Well, it's a sad tale. That's a very sad tale. But the point is the Fed is going to have to be even more aggressive, aren't they? Because the inflation is so deeply embedded.
Yeah, that's right. And you know, the inflation numbers this week didn't surprise me and you, but they surprised markets. So what that means is that like a year ago, you and I should have started a hedge fund, right? But, you know, the Fed's going to lift rates 0.75 point maybe for the rest of the year. And so I think that if you expect interest rates to be below 5 as we go into next year, then you're probably going to be surprised on the down, you know, on the upside for interest rates, on the downside.
I'm kind of thinking the same thing. I got to take a break. Producers are yelling at me. You're talking to Kevin Hassett, former chair of the Council of Economic Advisors, and his wonderful book, The Drift, Stopping America's Slide to Socialism. Kevin, we're going to talk about socialism. Let me take a quick break. We'll be right back. I'm Larry Kudlow with Kevin Hassett. Please stick around, folks.
From Wall Street to the White House, this is the Larry Kudlow Show.
Welcome back, folks. I'm Larry Kudlow here with my pal Kevin Hassett, former chairman of the Council of Economic Advisors. He's a scholar at Hoover Institution, and he's got a great book out, The Drift, Stopping America's Slide to Socialism. We're having a Fox Nation special Wednesday, 11 a.m. Eastern Time, on this very topic. Kevin will be ever present during the show because of the great work he's done. Kevin, walk us through. We don't have a lot of time, but you know, a couple of your key points. You know, right at the top, I think you're going to be in the first panel when we do this Fox Nation special on Wednesday. We are drifting towards socialism, aren't we?
Yeah, we are. And the, you know, in the book, basically, I deeply and quickly present some arguments of some of the most famous 20th century thinkers about why the U.S. would become socialism and talk about, you know, how basically people who posited about our future 100 years ago have turned out to be correct. And the reason why I think that's so important is that anybody can, after they see the facts, come up with a theory of the facts. But when people, you know, back in the 20s are looking at us and said, here's what's going to happen to you, and then it happens, then it's more meaningful because it means that they had sort of a model of thinking about the world that turned out to be correct. And the first person I talk a lot about, as you know, is Joseph Schumpeter,
right,
who really, you know, back in the 20s, looked ahead and he said, here's what's going to happen to the U.S., that they're going to be capitalist and rich for a while. He thought up until about the 70s. And he was writing in the 20s originally. But then what's going to happen is that they're going to turn into a socialist country. And the reason is that we're going to be rich by 1970. Everybody's going to send their kids to college. The colleges are going to be basically places that indoctrinate our kids to be socialists. And the colleges will control respectability because, like, a Harvard guy is obviously more impressive than a guy from North Carolina State. And then they're going to control the media because New York Times is going to hire, like, all the Harvard guys who've been trained to be socialists. And then the media is going to be socialists. And anybody who would defend capitalism, and that's me and you, is going to be attacked constantly by the media. And so the defenders of capitalism will shut up, they'll stop, and the socialists will take over. And they'll control the government, too, because they control the media. And this is basically the world that we lived in until Donald Trump came. And then Donald Trump came in, and he was able, like through his outrageous tweets and everything else, to end around the media and to become president. And as you and I know, we were in there fighting socialism every day. We were reversing Obama's socialist policies every day. But then, and this is the other part of my book, I dig into a second thinker, Marshall McLuhan, who thought about what the internet would look like. And he said, at the beginning, the internet is going to be this force that allows people to escape from a curated society that's curated by, and I'm putting words in his mouth now, by the socialist left that Schumpeter envisioned. And then all of a sudden, the socialist left, the respectable people, are going to lose their power because the internet makes it impossible for them to control information and to indoctrinate everybody to be socialist. But then McLuhan ends his analysis of the internet. He says, but what's going to happen is the powerful are going to see this. And then what they're going to do is they're going to kick the people they don't like off the internet.
Which is okay. Exactly.
But imagine a guy writing in the 50s and 60s said that in the end, you know, what's going to happen is the establishment will, there'll be a backlash and they're going to kick people off the internet. And that way they'll regain their control of, you know, basically the narrative. And is that not where we are right now as a country?
Mm. You know, that's
like,
amazing.
The last time you read a tweet from Donald Trump, I mean, I know you got the Truth Social, but.
No, but that's amazing. The idea, McLuhan, that they will kick the critics off. They will kick the critics of socialism off the internet. I mean, that's exactly what's happened in recent years with Twitter and Facebook. Exactly what's happened.
And I really think that this goes back to, and as you know, I'm not like a shameless pitcher of books, but I think that people really do need to understand what's going on in the world right now because we can stop this. We can stop the drift towards socialism, but we have to work together to do it. And the most important thing, I think, is that so the left thinks that they control respectability. And so when, like, you or Steve Moore talks about actually, hey, you know, this is how you make an economy strong, then, you know, the first criticism we hear is not substantive. It's like, oh, you know, Steve Moore is not from Harvard. Right?
Yes.
They think they control respectability.
I don't have a PhD, so I've been attacked for that down to
the years. Well, so why are we listening to you? You're just the anti-science, right? Like, you probably don't even like Tony Fauci, the god of wonderfulness. but the point is just that think about the last 4 years. Think about, like, the Trump economy and then the Biden economy. Who got that right more? Kudlow? Or Larry Summers? Larry won? And the answer is that you got it exactly right, and he got it exactly wrong, although now he's actually moving in the right direction on inflation. And so who should control respectability? This is why I went that way. That we, as right-wing supporters of free enterprise, need to understand that we control respectability, not them. And we have to, and but you could see, like so how often did you see at my old think tank, the American Enterprise Institute, somebody at AEI stand up and say, oh, don't attack that Trump economic policy. You're wrong. It's going to work. Did that ever happen? And the answer is no, because there are a bunch of cowards there that are afraid that the New York Times is going to attack them. And so if you know that's basically the mood that destroys society. We all have to recognize what's going on, and we have to stand up to these people. And I talk about how in the book.
In terms of a clear warning, many, many, many decades ago, would you put Friedrich Hayek in that too, The Road to Serfdom?
Yeah, and I write about Hayek too, and I think that in the end, one reason why the book is like here we are a year later and it's still got legs is that everybody kind of has heard of Schumpeter and Hayek, and they kind of think they know what they said, but what I do is I revive their thinking, but in a sort of relatively short amount of time, so it's kind of like a primer on those guys. But Hayek argued, so think about Hayek. Is that he was the guy that recognized that socialism leads to totalitarianism. And so he saw the Soviet Union, and then he sort of went back and studied. He was this really brilliant economist. You know, why is it that the Soviet Union exists? And then he found that basically every time a country moves sharply in the socialist direction, which we are doing right now, make no mistake about it, then people lose their rights. And people, you know, end up being oppressed, and you end up. He, you know, his famous book is "The Road to Serfdom." Mm-hmm. You know, a serf is a person who's basically enslaved by, you know, the government masters. And the reason why Hayek argues that it happens is really quite intuitive. He says that it's really a brilliant argument, and again, it's historically based. That a socialist is going to destroy the economy for sure. And so, if we spend a few years in a socialist. We have a democracy, we elect a socialist like we have. Then the socialist comes in, and what does he do? He gives you, you know, inflation and a weaker economy.
I got it.
And so I can hear the music. But the point is the socialist so therefore people are going to vote socialists out, and the socialist who doesn't get voted out has to be totalitarian. That's what
yes, right. Kevin Hassett, everybody. The name of the book is The Drift, Stopping America's Slide to Socialism. Nobody better on that. It's really a key book. I'm Larry Kudlow. We're going to take a break. Other side, Vivek Ramaswamy is going to talk about why folks don't seem to want to work in America anymore. A nation of victims. Stick around. Much more to come.